Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to the Manchester Is Red podcast from the Manchester Evening News. I'm today's host, Rich Faye, standing in for the under-the-weather Tyrone Marshall. I suppose he has sort of played with his namesake there. Too ill to feature there, Mr. Marshall. Samuel, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And of course, Stephen Ralston's off gallivanting in Poland somewhere. He's ensured that he's out of the running for different reasons. Personal reasons is his absence this week, I think it's safe to say.
On today's show, we will discuss United's upcoming FA Cup trip to face Newport County. We'll also get into the transfer window. But first, let's start with Anthony Martial and Samuel. Have we seen the last of him in a United shirt?
I hope so. I say that not objectively whatsoever, but it's. I think there were certain players that denied that privilege, and I think that a lot of Manchester United supporters would probably be in favour of the club just paying up his contract and allowing him to clear out his locker and clear off. I suspect that won't happen. If that was going to happen, United might have announced that with his injury in midweek, but. This, by the time, provided he does return on schedule, I think it'll have been a 16-week layoff. I was looking at the numbers, and it's easy to forget that how much he missed in the 2020-21 season. I think he missed the last 2 months of that before he went on loan to Sevilla in January 22 that season. I think he played in only 12 of 30 games. He had some layoffs there as well. Last season, I think he played in 28 out of 62 games, so he was missing for 34 games through various layoffs. And the irony is this season, up until that sorry end to his, possibly to his United career against Bournemouth in early December, he had been in every matchday squad this season. He'd been fit for the best part of 4 months, but all of a sudden he's unwell, and then every week he's still unwell, and people start to get suspicious, and now he's got an injury, now he's had surgery, and now we won't see him again possibly until gone Easter, and the clocks will have gone forward as well by that point, so that's how long it's going to be until Manchester United fans possibly do see him again. But I think the way it's gone this season, where of course with Marshall his removal in two games has been celebrated by United supporters. I think it was the Newcastle game and the Bournemouth game. The cheers were a lot louder during the Bournemouth game, possibly because it was a Premier League game, and it was going even worse than it was against Newcastle in the League Cup tie. And there have been a couple of other players who've copped some flack as well from the matchgoers this season. And I think when Anthony replaced Marcus Rashford against Spurs, there were definitely a few boos, I presume for Anthony. And I wouldn't be surprised if Marshall got that treatment if he does indeed play. And I think there has to be an outside chance, just because you look at Manchester United's forward line and they've only got six forwards. they've got one striker and five wingers, and it's lopsided. I mean, Alejandro Garnacho has done very well on the right, and he's playing there ahead of Anthony, Ahmad, Facundo Pellistri. Marcus Rashford has been back in the goals, at least with coming back into the team and playing on the left. And it's, you know, they're quite thin up top. And some of those players, I don't think will necessarily be at United next season. So they could do with an extra body there. And Martial would have been an extra body, but it's been so long since he last participated in a game. And when he has played in games this season, you've often wondered, why is he starting? I mean, the nadir for him, I didn't think you could get any worse than the Newcastle away game. But then a week later, there he was getting cheered off by United's home fans during a 3-0 humbling by Bournemouth. But the Newcastle away performance was a real worry for United, just that Ten Hag thought that was the way forward in terms of starting Martial and then starting Marcus Rashford that day as well, because he was in really poor form. And those two were the fall guys of the fallout. But you look at Martial's career at United, this is his ninth season, I think it is, and he has long outstayed his welcome. And I remember speaking to the people at the club during Ten Hag's first summer saying, look, you know, there's a decision to be made there, because look at his contract situation. And lo and behold, he wasn't sold that summer. He wasn't sold last summer. There's mitigation for that. There's a lot of context around it. He was, of course, injured for almost the entirety of the 2023 summer transfer window, so he was unsellable. In 12 months earlier, in 22, he just had a pretty poor loan spell at Sevilla. United did not have any real sellable assets in that squad after a really dreadful season, and Martial's form had been poor for a couple of years, so it would have been difficult to find a buyer. But then again, you think, well, another club, if they were proactive with their dealings, they probably would have found a club for him. They would have got him off the books. But ultimately, this is a player who probably should have gone. When he does go in the summer, it will be 6 years too late. There was certainly interest in him in 2018. He wanted to leave, as his agent went on the record as stating, and his resale value would have been high. There was certainly a call to Ed Woodward from Daniel Levy, the Tottenham chairman, inquiring about Martial. But United's decision makers back then, they were petrified of fan perception, and there were certain players that they just refused to entertain the prospect of losing them, and Martial was one of them. And you know, more for United, because they've not had much return whatsoever. You only have to look at his seasonal goal scoring tallies. I think it's something like, is it 17, 8, 11, 12, 23, 7.
This is really putting your knowledge to the test, isn't it?
9 and 2. I think I may be wrong here or there, but I think that's roughly, if it's 100% correct, then great. But I think it's roughly more or less the, you know.
It's like you're auditioning telling. To be a bingo caller there, Samuel.
I know. Minus the charisma of, yeah, two fat ladies, 8 goals and what have you. But he's had two good seasons.
I think I make
9.
It, yeah. I think it's his 22nd separate illness or injury since he joined the club. I think he's missed, at the moment, 83 matches, and that'll probably be closer to 100, like you said, by the time the season's actually up. So, like you said, he's long overdue that. And what is he, 9 years in now? Testimonial time for you?
Well, I suspect he won't hit that magic 10-year mark. And it's almost like the testimonial in football, there's possibly a piece in it that it doesn't seem to exist anymore. I don't think... And quite rightly so.
What was the last United one? Would it have been Scholes or Giggs?
No, I think it might have been Rio Ferdinand.
Carrick.
Carrick, yeah. Oof. Michael Carrick had a testimonial in 2017. It was the week of the it was the day of the concert at the cricket ground after the arena bombing. So there were, you know, it was very raw time in Manchester after that, you know, appalling attack at the Manchester Arena for the Ariana Grande concert. And, you know, feelings were very pent up, and United had just had a Europa League final. And I think that game had been scheduled for that Sunday, but you had the concert going on at the cricket ground down the road in tribute to the victims of the arena attack. But that must have been the last one. I think Antonio Valencia was, there was talk of him maybe getting one, but
Yeah, coming back for one, wasn't he? Yeah, I seem to remember reporting on that, where he said he wanted to have one. He was at El Di Quito or someone that he joined, hadn't he? And
yes.
I'm pretty sure it was almost even penciled in.
It was. I think it was COVID that scuppered it, but I suspect it would have been at the AJ Bell Stadium or the Lee Sports Village, possibly. I don't think they'd have had a great turnout for that one. And that was the other thing with testimonials. The turnouts for them was not always great. I think you had to be very specific about the opponents. If it wasn't going to be an all-star 11, then it was the safe bet always was just to say, look, can we have Celtic down, because Celtic will bring about half of Glasgow with them and they'll have as many fans there as United did, which is why probably why Ryan Giggs and Roy Keane had their testimonials, partly their testimonials against them.
Maybe we should do the Manchester's Red sort of petition to get Tony V his testimonial then. Maybe we'll start that movement. I mean, this will be a very loose tangent, but this can bring us kind of nicely onto Pep Guardiola's quotes about Omar Berardi. He said that, you know, if he does transform United, name a stand after him. Maybe he'll deserve a testimonial. But I do think there is a pertinent point here, isn't there, Samuel, that I mentioned this on, dare I say it, the Talking City podcast last week, that Omar Berardi joining United doesn't mean that they're going to start playing tiki-taka football and winning games every single week, does it? And Pep Guardiola's comments this week have sort of signalled that he suggests there's a lot more to it than just Berardi joining United. But from a United point of view, they'll argue, look, it is a step in the right direction. It's a big piece of the puzzle. United will say, we're well aware that there's bigger issues at play. But the warning from City that, look, Berardi's not going to come in and be a magic wand solution.
No, and I don't think there have been any United fans suggesting that he's the panacea as well. The next appointment is arguably going to be the more important, possibly the most important move that Ineos make, which is going to be the sporting director. Who that is, what's their track record? Are they going to be able to sustain their work from previous clubs at Manchester United? It's going to be going to be a fair old while until we're able to judge that sporting director, because they'll obviously recruitment for this summer, you'd imagine, and then the players have to, you know, be given a bit of time to for us to judge them, and then, you know, I'm sure we'll speak to people at United as we endeavour to do and try to get as much background as possible on it. But with Berardi, he's clearly talked a good game in the past, and that I think I've mentioned on the podcast on Monday, referring to Cy Bajkowski's interview with him about 3.5 years ago, and you know he came across well there, and he said about, I think the first words on the transfer market were, we spend smart, and yes, City absolutely do. They've been, you know, it's when he laid, just reading his quotes, the way he laid it out, like, we have a value of a player. If that value doesn't meet it, then we'll move on to someone else. And City are very good at not just scouting a player for a position, but scouting players for a position, because if that move falls through, it's someone else. And they've taken the odd hit here and there in that, you know, that summer that they wanted Maguire. I don't think they signed a centre-half, and I think it was early on that season they lost at Norwich City. I think Angelino came back from PSV Eindhoven. He contributed some really damaging defeats to Liverpool and United. They didn't win the title that season, but then a few months later, they signed Ruben Diaz, who was either PFA Player of the Year or the Football Writers Association Player of the Year as they won the league that season. Nathan Ake came in, who I always thought was going to be a really good sign for City, not necessarily as a left back, but watching him at Bournemouth, I thought that was a very shrewd piece of business, and I didn't think the fee they paid was too steep. I know it was £40 million, but I still think that given his cachet, it was a reasonable figure, and nobody's complaining about that fee whatsoever, because if you go to City, the chances are, I mean, their hit rate in terms of signings must be 90% there or thereabouts in the last 10 years. And even the years, I forget, like when that first summer post-Ferguson, and obviously City in 2013-14, they won the title and they won the League Cup. But their four main signings that summer in 2013, it's only a 25% hit rate, success rate, sorry. And that's Fernandinho. I think the other three players they bought were Stefan Jovetic, Alvaro Negredo, and Jesus Navas. Now, Navas was okay for City, but Negredo and Jovetic didn't hang around particularly long. But even then, they had, you know, they had good players in place. They knew that if they had the right manager, and if they made the odd signing that could impose themselves quickly, or certain players, existing players in the squad improved, they could get up to a level that they'd become champions. And that was a hell of a title race that season as well. It's not like the standards in the Premier League plummeted. Arsenal threatened for a fair old while, and Liverpool, you know, threatened to come out of nowhere, and it looked like it was going to be theirs until about late April time or mid-April time. But that's just one example of City, and they don't always get it right. And I don't think they've ever pretended that they always get it right either. But the way they execute plans and the fullback options and, you know, the forward planning is just on a completely different plane from what is at United. And that's why they've been as successful as they have been over the last 10 or 15 years.
Now, we spoke about a true Premier League icon leaving after 9 years, not just Anthony Martial, but as we're recording this, Jurgen Klopp's announced that he'll be leaving Liverpool at the end of the season. And Samuel, I suppose that quite pertinent for Man United that they need to get their act together. Yeah, there's a lot of change coming in the Premier League, and Liverpool without Klopp, there's an open door for United to try and take advantage of.
Well, I feel like Jamie Carragher, when Thierry Henry touches him on the thigh. And that was, of course, over a Liverpool managerial change as well. I think it was when Brendan Rodgers was sat that day, and of course Klopp came in. And I think it's fair to say that Klopp is not going to become the managerial Phil Chisnell and cross the divide to United. I'm sure a lot of United fans would love that to happen, but it's just not going to, let's face it. And this isn't the first time this has happened. He had a few years left in his contract, didn't he? I think. And I remember he signed a contract with Dortmund until 2018, and that was in late 2013, I think it would have been. But of course, he left in the summer of 2015. So it just goes to show. I always find when clubs always say that so and so has signed a new contract until that will keep him here until this year, and you think, look, the chances are he will not be there until that year because things always change in football. But Klopp leaving Liverpool, I mean, that is a bolt from the blue. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And that is quite a seismic change for a club that will have had a manager there for the best part of 9 years. That rarely happens. You don't get that longevity. And of course, there's every chance next year, maybe sooner as well, that Pep Guardiola will leave Manchester City. I remember Ty telling me when they were in in Saudi Arabia, Guardiola said, I want to say something after they'd won the Club World Cup. And some of them looked at each other as if to say, oh God, is he actually going to, you know, say that he's going to leave City now? And he didn't say that, but it wouldn't have been as shocking as Ty said it felt at the time. It would have been in keeping with Guardiola's character. And you know, sometimes when you've reached the peak, as Guardiola has at City and look, Klopp has at Liverpool as well, there comes a point where you want to do something else. And it's, as you say, for United, it's opportunity knocks. That's another incentive, as if, I mean, they didn't need one anyway, but they've got to get their house in order this summer because, you know, maybe Erik ten Hag will be right when he said era's come to an end, because this is an era that is coming to an end for Liverpool. I know it's very tentative talk, and you know, Klopp will probably hate people for even mentioning it at a press conference, but they are still in four competitions this season. They have the capabilities to win all four of them, I think. I mean, they came pretty close a couple of years ago when they got to the final of the three cup competitions, and they took the Premier League title race to the wire on the final day. He's been an exceptional. He's been an exceptional coach for them. He's going to be bracketed with Shankly, with Bob Paisley, and rightly so, because he's not only just won a European Cup, but he was the guy who oversaw the end of a 30-year title drought as well. And I suppose the one thing that will, you know, the pity for Liverpool fans is that it was, when they did lift the Premier League trophy, it was in an empty stadium. I don't think they'd have ever envisaged their drought to have ended in such a, you know, pretty hollow way, but it's still a Premier League title win, and he has been great for English football as well. And yeah, I think United fans will certainly be glad to see the back of him as Liverpool coach, because their record against Liverpool during this time has been dreadful. I think unless they draw them in the FA Cup, in fact, I think they'll have gone the whole, will have been just one win at Anfield against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. And that was in his very early days there. I think he was probably not even 3 months in. But going back to your point, United, they've got the chief exec in, they've got to get the sporting director in, they've got to be decisive over the manager. Like, is this going to elicit a reaction from Ten Hag as well? Is he going to be able to think, right, I've got to get my act together now. I've got a very fit squad for this weekend. I've got a very fit squad, a foolish squad for a really important month in February. I've got to put a statement of intent out there, not just for the team, but for myself as well. And so this next month coming up, which was already going to be fascinating as an observer on Manchester United, I think it's going to be even more fascinating now in light of today's news.
Yeah, if only Steven Gerrard hadn't signed that new contract with Alf Etifak. This was earlier this week. I mean, he'd be ruined that, wouldn't he? That's sort of ripped up our running order, but we will be back after this short break to take a look at United's behind closed doors game against Burnley this week and bring you a bit on the transfer situation as well. Welcome back then to the Manchester Is Red podcast, the Manchester Evening News. Samuel Lent, transfers. You'll be glad to know that you've only got, what, one or two podcasts left before the transfer window finally closes. But bringing us up to date with some of the deals that people might have missed this week. And I guess in attack, there's some interesting news. I know the line will probably be live by the time this podcast is live on Facundo Pellestri's future at the club. Maybe looking less certain that he'll leave the club on loan this month.
Yeah, this is a little peek behind the curtain, because it's been drafted, and I'm just waiting for a response back. But I've been told that could just have collapsed now, that it might have fallen through, that he could end up staying at United for the rest of this season. As of last week, United expected him to go on loan at the start of the week. That shifted to in the balance, so it would be quite a natural progression, if you want to call it progression. Don't think Pellistri would. For it to be off now. I think it's possible that Marshall's injury has had a bearing on it, even though he's been missing for a month already. Because as I said earlier, you look at Manchester United's forward line, it is really thin. They've got one striker and five wingers, and it's quite lopsided as well. I mean, they used to have an absolute surefit of left-sided forwards, and at the moment the way it's going, they've actually got one, because Alejandro Garnacho is playing on the right. That's not going to be forever, I think it's safe to say, but for the time being Garnacho absolutely has to start. Rashford has been back in the goals of late. His performance level has still been an issue. I thought he was electric against Villa in the second half on Boxing Day. He probably, I'd say, salvaged a quite erratic half with a very tidy goal against Tottenham. He took his goal well against Forest, but it wasn't a particularly good performance from him. But he started scoring again. You've got to, hopefully, from United's sake, build on that. And okay, Pellistri hasn't started a game since September. I suppose that September was a bit of a trial run for him. He had three starts in three quite different games: Bayern Munich away, Palace at home in the League Cup, Palace at home in the League. And he certainly didn't pass that trial. If that was a trialist at club, they wouldn't end up signing for the club. I think it's safe to say, and given his not lack of development, because he's quite prominent for Uruguay, and I think he'll get a reasonable move at a certain point. But in terms of his development at United, he's been there for nearly 3.5 years now. He's embarked on two loan spells. This could actually be the third planned loan for him that's been abandoned, because he was going to go on loan at the start of last season, but he got injured against Atletico Madrid in Oslo. I think was that the game you were at, I think?
Yes, I did Oslo 2 years in a row, which was, yeah. I don't want to be ungrateful. It was it was good to have that sort of Groundhog Day experience.
Yeah. So, I think, We're not insulting our Norwegian listeners whatsoever, but yeah, it has. I know what you mean, and that there have been quite a lot of Scandinavian friendlies, and the repetition is something that maybe United could do without. But he was also due to go on loan at the start of for this season as well. But then Ahmad got injured in New Jersey at the start of United's pre-season tour, so that effectively scuppered a loan move for Plistri. And then we've got this month, we've not got long until the transfer window closes next Thursday, so that's another one. That would be three loans that have been abandoned. That tells you quite a lot about where he's at United, and just the fact that there needs to be a clean break from United at some point this year. It's probably not going to happen over the next week, but in the summer certainly. I think he's a player that they could make a profit on, given that they signed him from Peñarol for £9 million, I think it was, on deadline day in October 2020. He has some potential. There have been a lot of games where he's come on. He's had a really good impact, as you said last week, about his impact at Fulham, where although Fernandez got the goal, and it was a goalkeeping mistake as well, but that goal was made possible by Palistri's hard work and contribution. And he's the anti-Antony. That day he was the anti-Antony. Antony was cheered off when he was substituted. Palistri came on, and without him, United probably wouldn't have won the game. But those examples, they're few and far between. As I said, he has made some good impacts off the bench, but you can't just, especially someone so young as well. I think if it was someone in their late 20s or early 30s who was fulfilling that role, you think, okay, you know, keep them on board. But in the case of Palistri, he's what, 21 or 22. It's in his interest and United's interest for there to be a permanent departure in the summer. And I think he'd be an asset in the right environment at the right team. He's a really good lad. He's very polite. No airs or graces. He's not pretentious whatsoever. Normal haircut, no tattoos. I know I'm sounding like Jose Mourinho talking up Scott McTominay that time, but there's a lot to like about him. And it's just a pity that when he has had his opportunities as a starter for United, and I know there have only been four of them overall, and he probably did deserve more starts than that, he's not taken them. And he did have a run of games in September, and unfortunately, he didn't quite pass muster.
Yes, he's in that difficult situation, isn't he, as well, particularly, like I said, his young age, where he's played more for Uruguay than he has for United. And obviously that's going to give you, I'm not going to say an entitlement, but he obviously has this pedigree to be playing a lot more football and to be having that pressure really to start every week that he's just never going to get at United. And yeah, it's just unfortunate the way it's worked out. And it always felt this month, didn't it? It was either going to be himself or Ahmad, maybe he would get the chance. I know you wrote as well, was it last week or the week before, that Ahmad's the one they are looking to keep between now and the end of the season. But obviously the Palestri situation is very fluid. And again, this is just sort of evidence of how quickly things change on the transfer front, that you can have something planned out. But a contributing factor to that might be the lack of cover, because they've loaned out, you know, like I said, what is it, 9 loan deals already this month for different players. But Omari Forson as well, I know we've both been looking at that one, but looks like he could leave the club, if not this month, but this summer. Contract talks stalling over that. And again, that's a difficult dilemma, isn't it, Samuel? Because United don't want to lose some highly rated young players. And of course, he recently became the 249th player from the academy to make a competitive appearance. But if there is the likelihood they could leave for free, you've got to consider permanent exits, haven't you?
You have. And is there really a pathway into the first team for Omari Forson? I really do doubt it. I thought that he was one of the more surprising inclusions on the pre-season tour, and he obviously had that prominence against Dortmund where he was doing quite well, and then he got involved in a scuffle and Ten Hag substituted him. It was a punishment because he thought he was too hot-headed, and he clearly wanted him to learn from that lesson. He's just not had a look in at all this season. There was a reason why he was on the bench at Wigan. United squad was extremely depleted, and their bench was very, very callow that evening. But I do like this method of United, that with academy players, if there's no pathway, who cares if they've scored against Leeds and Oslo? Just, you know, sell them a few weeks later. If anything, cash in on it, because some clubs are likely to have their heads turned by that, and it might add a little bit of value to the player who, let's face it, Noah Memoran, who I was referring to there, he was never going to play for United first team, so you might as well sell him. And I think with the only loan move that they've overseen this month that I would question just in terms of a numbers, from a numbers point of view, would be Hugel, because he is an out-and-out striker. And United only have one out-and-out striker in Hoyland, and they're going to have to hope that Hoyland stays fit and he continues with his goal-scoring form, which is, you know, it's two goals in his last two Premier League games now, two very good goals as well. He really does need to sustain that in February. And nobody, I'm not saying for a single second that, you know, Joe Hugel, you know, there could be a time there that you've got to drop Hoyland and put Joe Hugel in the team, not at all. But it's about having bodies and numbers. And Val Veghorst last year, he was a body. That was all he was really for United. They were never going to get a forward who was going to be top drawer at that point of the season, and particularly because they were having to look at loan options as well. And they're in a similar situation at the moment, and they're not outright ruling out a move for an income in this month, but as it stands, it is looking unlikely. And I think that if they're to keep Pellistri, that would indicate it's even unlikelier that they would go for a late incoming, because you're keeping your numbers tight there. You're not. I think if a striker was coming in, then you could say to Facundo Pellistri, yeah, you can go out on loan. But as I said, that story hasn't been done. But from what I've been told, there is some uncertainty as to whether Pellistri would go out on loan now, and that would indicate that they know they've not got the numbers there. And yes, Rashford can play through the middle, but he doesn't want to play there. I don't think there's any United fan that wants him to play there. They've got to just hope that it's the one benefit of not having any European competition to participate in is that the games are more spread out. There are going to be a lot of free midweeks. February is a busy month. They should have six fixtures in it overall, because the weekend game against Newport County, it's a borderline buy into the fifth round of the FA Cup. But it's not like it's not like last February where they had eight games in 26 days, and there were some really intense games as well against Barcelona, and they had a double header against Leeds. Even when they beat Leicester 3-0, Leicester in the first half were the better side at Old Trafford. United only really got going when Jadon Sancho, of all people, came on for the second half, and they in the end they won that quite comfortably. And of course the month ended with a cup final, so it's not going to be as intense as last February, and United navigated that nigh on perfectly with six wins and two draws, and in both of those draws they came from behind and probably ended both games against Leeds and Barcelona disappointed not to have won. And that was the level they were operating at the time. And of course, the level has dropped significantly this season, but they are going to still need, you know, quite a deep squad and have quality and depth. And that's the reassuring thing. It feels like going into this weekend's game, even though it's only Newport County of League Two, they've got quite a full squad, and I think there's a chance that Ten Hag should play his strongest outfield players in that game.
Yeah, we'll get onto our FA Cup preview after this short break. And I suppose the question for you there, Samuel, is, and there isn't really an answer to this, but what if Hoyland gets a knock? Or what if this weekend you don't want to risk him against Newport? If you go 2-0 up and you want to make those changes. Like you said, I don't get the Hugel one in the sense that he is worth keeping along, isn't he? Because who would be next in line now, hypothetically? If Hoyland was to get injured, you've got Marshall, who's sidelined anyway. Rashford doesn't want to play there. If you play Rashford through the middle, you stunt the progress of Garnacho on the right and put him back onto the left. You then go to Anthony or Ahmad on the right. There is a way around it, but I guess it just further fuels this thought that United needs another striker at some point. The suggestion that United could move one before deadline day, I mean, I do find it quite ironic that people are saying they might need to replace Martial. I mean, they've not needed to replace him all season. They've been coping without him anyway, even when he's been fit, basically. Do you think it is urgent that United get someone in this month, another body, a la sort of Veghorst or Igalo, or do you think it is just what they're stuck with now?
I've always been of the opinion that they had to get a striker in this month and just try and, you know, be really fastidious in going through the market and looking at scouring for the options. I was thrown off then. A contact just messaged saying, going to United, ... And I just had to clarify that that was absolute nonsense. He was just messing with me about Klopp.
But that would be in your statement, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Berada and Klopp.
Yeah, that really would. Yeah, there'd be that would be pretty extraordinary. But unfortunately not for United in the case of Klopp. But as I said, I've always been in the opinion that they needed another striker to come in, and not necessarily a starting striker, but someone who was at least experienced, he's got the know-how, possibly Premier League experience, but someone just to alleviate the burden on Højlund. And with Ighalo, in fairness to him, before the pandemic swept across the continent and shut football down, Ighalo was fulfilling that role pretty much perfectly. He started against Derby, he scored a couple of goals. He started against Club Rouge, he started against LASK and scored in those games as well. He came on in the Derby with United 1-0 up and did brilliantly. His hold-up play and killing time, he did really, really well in that cameo when Scott McTominay finished it off via that Ederson assist. So for about a month or so, he was exactly what United needed, but of course you need it for a 4-month period for this season, and it's a very specific type of player you'd be looking at. And I know Choupo-Moting is a very obvious name that has been plucked out, and you know, there'll be certain agents who will be trying to whip up a market for their client. But Choupo-Moting does get on the bench most weeks at Bayern Munich, and do Bayern Munich want to leave themselves short? You look at the Bayern Munich bench most weeks, and I don't think this is necessarily me just being insular, but there are names on it that you wouldn't recognise, and that's because of the way they've assembled their squad. And that wasn't always the case. If I go back to when they won the treble under Jupp Heynckes nearly 11 years ago, you did literally recognise every Bayern Munich name in the starting lineup on the bench, but they clearly assemble their squad in a different way now. And do they want to lose someone who's got Premier League experience, Liga experience, has been at Bayern Munich for a couple of years and can step into the breach every now and then should Harry Kane need a breather? Because that's something also to consider. Harry Kane is not a young striker. So it would have to be, like, why would Bayern Munich loan that player when there are no playing, when, you know, really from their perspective, it'd be like, if you want him, fine, but give us a fee. You know, we would want quite a good fee for that, which is why loan fees have become a lot more prevalent during discussions between clubs. Obviously, Sabitzer went from Bayern to United last year, but he just had such little playing prospects at the time, and Bayern were clearly comfortable with the midfielders they had, and it wasn't as if they certainly weren't depleted at any point in midfield in the running last season either. So that was one that benefited both parties. But by now, you'd have hoped United would have been able to do something if they were going to do something. Because Marshall's, the news about Marshall in midweek, that should not have changed United being on the lookout for a striker, I don't think. Because they knew that he wasn't playing, that he was unwell or injured or what have you. They should have been aware of the groin problem and the possibility of surgery. You know, if Marshall was fit this month, I'm sure they'd have tried to get him out, and then they've got the leverage to get someone in. But he's still on the wage bill unless they pay up his contract and let him go now, which I don't think they are going to do. So as I said, it's not like when Marcus Rashford got injured in late January in 2020 and on deadline day, they were scrounging around for Joshua King or Odin Ighalo or a striker with a tenuous association to Jim Solbakken or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They've had advance notice of the need to get a striker in, and for whatever reason, probably the economics of it, they've not done that.
Like I said, we can keep up to date with all the transfer news anyway on the Manchester Evening News website. And a quick plug, Samuel, for your newsletter. Are you on commission for this? Because we've been told to put it in every single podcast.
Apparently, yes. Yeah. No commission, but yes, I've been made aware it's in overdrive. I'm starting to feel like Laurie Whitwell and his 10% off or 50% off, or however, whatever the percentage is.
It's like a DFS sale, this, isn't it? Does it ever end?
I've certainly not got the salesman skills of Laurie. I can't compare myself to Laurie in that sense whatsoever. No.
Well, if you want to keep up with all the latest news from Old Trafford, why not sign up to Samuel's newsletter and you can get yourself a deal this month. 50% off the Inside Old Trafford newsletter, currently available for just £20 a year via Substack. You can become a full subscriber now and join the Inside Old Trafford community with 50% off an annual subscription until February the 1st, transfer deadline day. There will be a link to the newsletter in the podcast description below. Join us after the short break where we will look ahead to Newport County. Welcome back then to the Manchester Is Red podcast for Manchester News. Part three, Newport County in the FA Cup. Samuel, you've already said it's basically a bye to the fifth round. What could go wrong?
Newport after last week, couldn't you? Yes, after that.
Yeah, I mean, Wrexham did play an hour of 10 men and we still nearly got a point. Newport, though, are on a high. They've been pretty good in recent weeks. Will Evans, a very good striker for them. Hugh Jenkins, of course, the former Swansea chairman, has just invested in the club as well. So they're on a bit of a high. They're feeling boosted. They've got decent FA Cup pedigree as well, Newport. They'll always fancy their chances at Rodney Parade. Do you fancy your trip to Rodney Parade this weekend?
Well, this is the twist, because my accreditation request has been rejected for this game, but Tyrone's has been accepted. So Tyrone, the last question he asked me, actually, unsurprisingly, you can probably guess it already, but it was, want to swap then? And I've not replied to him yet. So he, as it stands in terms of movement, departures from the MEN to South Wales on a temporary basis, temporary transfer, that will be time making that trip. So it's not ideal. He said that they got two in for City a few years ago when they played down there. But I think, you know, this is probably more evidence that however much better City are than United as a football team, United are still a vastly bigger club. And I'm sure they've had more accreditation requests there this week. But in terms of United's chances, yeah, I still think it's a borderline buy. And I suppose a vindictive streak in me hopes that they really do, grind them to the ground and make them pay, given that they've had the temerity to not back one of our accreditation requests this week.
I think as well, is FA Cup draw is 2 p.m. on Sunday as well, so United would already know their potential opponents for round five. I don't want to start going into this of who would you want, because that is good. Just disrespectful to Newport, but there obviously will be that element playing into it. I don't think, as you said earlier, that will affect Ten Hag's team selection. And the quandary really is there's been so few games this month. We've had that 2 week break now for United, that there is almost no argument not to go full strength. As much as supporters would love to see, you know, some of the youngsters get a go and to see maybe a bit of an experimental team, it does just make sense to go full strength, doesn't it? But then, of course, there's a lot more at stake if you do.
Yes, and in venison, there aren't really many youngsters knocking on the door that you would say who haven't played before, who you'd think would really like to see him play. I mean, the youth team, of course, lost to Swindon in the FA Youth Cup last week, which was I watched the game. It was a shocking result, and it was a bit of a shocking performance from United as well. They played the occasion rather than the opponent. So you're not going to see, I'd be amazed if we saw Jack Fletcher in the squad at Newport, never mind the team. Just looking at the players, we're speaking before the press conference, which is in just under 2 hours' time. But the way it's shaping up, that team is going to be a very, very strong side. The bench is going to be strong as well. I was looking at what the probable 18-man squad will be, and teaming with internationals. I think almost every player will have international honours of some sort, apart from the odd one or two, probably Wan-Bissaka and Kobbie Mainoo. So I think it has to go full strength, because they've not, as you said, they've not played in 2 weeks. They've got a big month ahead of them. It's pretty good prep for Wolves on Thursday. 4 day gap. Players need to get some match rhythm. If you can get the game boxed off after 45 minutes or an hour, then you can rotate a bit and give other players a go. But it's as I said, it's not like that Wigan game. I mean, they could have hit the 250 mark quite easily that night if it was Joe Hugel coming on with Amari Force and rather than Hannibal Mejbri, which in hindsight is probably what should have happened, because I think they knew at that point that Mejbri was going to head out on loan. But in the end, he came on for probably a farewell cameo from United. And as I said earlier, I think that this is Ten Hag has said a few times he's never had the opportunity to play his strongest United side, and that is true. I think he said at one point last season that the City home game was the only time, but Diogo Dalot was injured for that one, and he made some tactical choices that day. I mean, Lisandro Martinez didn't start that game. Luke Shaw started at centre half because Martinez was still feeling his way back in after winning the World Cup with Argentina. But this weekend, that United, barring any late withdrawals through injury or illness, they will have their 10 best outfield players available to play against Newport County. And you might as well play them because February is a big month. You've got the closed weeks, no midweek matches really, apart from obviously Wolves at the start of it. You've got to prepare for that as best you possibly can. And I don't think there are any excuses not to be playing, not looking ahead to February anyway. You're not going to be rotating in those games. There's a hell of a lot at stake in every Premier League match. So, you know, start as you mean to go on this weekend.
Exactly. I agree with you on that. And I guess maybe the enticing aspect for you, Samuel, is if you did make the journey to Rodney Parade, you might get to see Altay Bayinda in the flesh. Yes. Looks like he's definitely going to finally make his debut this weekend. Do you think it matters at all how he plays? Andre Onana will come back from AFCON and take his place, surely.
Yeah, I think that obviously with Onana, I mean, Cameroon's game and the timings of it, he's probably a doubt for the Wolves game. And of course, the Wolves have had some quite impressive results this season. I think Gary O'Neill's done a decent job. So unless Bayinda drops one in or looks particularly nervous against Newport, he's probably starting two games on the trot. And then that's probably going to be it, unless Cameroon do go deep into AFCON and Onana stays marooned there, given that he's already been dropped. I mean, that the way that has played out has been, it could hardly have gone any worse for him. And I wrote, I think earlier in the week or last week, that United have created a mountain out of a molehill trying to keep him for two games. And one of those games was against Wigan. The other game, he let in two savable goals. So, and he's gone out there. He was really poor for Sadio Mane's goal in Senegal's win against Cameroon. And then in the must-win final group game, which Cameroon did win very late on, and Onana was on the bench and playing cheerleader. So United must be looking at that thinking, why always us? To paraphrase Mario Balotelli, because they did sign him on the assumption that his international career was over. And I go back to that Tottenham game as well. I mean, Onana had a flight to catch not long after it, and then they were playing the next day, and he bust a gut to get to that game, only to discover that he hadn't been picked, which it was quite logical given that he arrived 3 hours before the game against Guinea or something like that. But you'd think that his focus during the game against Spurs that must have been wavering. That must have compromised his performance level of some sort. And as I said, I thought the two goals that went in, they were both preventable from a goalkeeper's perspective. So once AFCON is out of the way, at least he can, he needs to come back and have a clear frame of mind. But his season has unfortunately gone from bad to worse. But for Bayinda, it's a belated opportunity. He played in the behind closed doors a game against Burnley this week.
We were going to mention that. We never did, actually.
We did.
United lost by all accounts, didn't they?
Klopp came in. Yeah. Klopp. Yeah.
It's one of those things, isn't it, Samuel, where you can make an easy headline out of it and say Burnley have done the double over United in behind closed doors games this season. They lost the only game that mattered. But these are just training exercises, aren't they, for United? And it will have been fitness rather than performance that game in midweek.
Yes. And it was the players coming back from injury or players who haven't had much playing time who were involved in it. There were a batch of players that arrived for training at 9 a.m, like Rashford, Garnacho, Maynou, Dalot, McTominay, Varane, etc. players who've been available recently who just trained whilst the other players had an afternoon match against a Burnley side. Burnley won 3-1 I think they won 3-0 in a behind closed doors game at Carrington back in August as well. And it, United, we're talking about this midway through last season, ahead of the season restarting after the World Cup, having conversations with clubs in the Northwest to arrange behind closed doors games because it's obviously mutually beneficial. I'm not too sure how strong Burnley were, but United, I think it was Casemiro, Martinez, Shaw, Maguire, Palistri, Ahmad, Bayindir played. Those players were the ones who were involved in it because they've been coming back from injury or they've not had a lot of playing time whatsoever. And Palistri's participation in that might also be another indicator that he's possibly sticking around for the rest of the season.
That's it for today's podcast. And a note that we have recorded this pre-press conference on Friday. So if there's any team news we might have missed, that is the caveat as to why. Like I said, you can catch all that on the Manchester Evening News website anyway. And we'll have the live press conference blog as well from Carrington. We will be back on Monday.
Wait,
I believe
Rich,
that'll be...
Rich.
Yes.
I've just had word. Don't know if this is...
Oh, here we
bad
go.
News or
here
good
we go.
News. Breaking news. I've now been accepted for Newport.
Oh, wow. Okay, so Samuel will be there. Bayindir in the flesh. We look forward to that really being covered by all angles. Are you looking forward to it then?
Do you know what? I am. I do.
I take it all back.
The romance for those games, like, you look forward to it. You get there early. It's an empty terrace. You think, oh, this is the magic of the FA Cup. And then, as I've discovered at Cambridge, you get in the stands and the Wi-Fi collapses and you end up watching it on... iPlayer in this makeshift room behind the goal because they've not got a TV license and it's buffering. that is literally what happened at Cambridge 9 years ago. But Yeovil did a terrific job back in 2018. Everything went according to plan that day. So that
did you do all the shots ever? Was that 2014?
No, but
I think 2015?
That was 2011. So I was no longer a student, but I was jobless at that point and just trying to applying for the local to the local
is there
call
a, is
centre.
Is there a lower league United sort of game you've been to that you've enjoyed the most? What has been your favourite? Was it Yeovil? Was it Hirsch Park?
Yeovil was quite good. Despite the working conditions, I did like going to Cambridge. I mean, my friend lives there, and fortunately the weather was quite nice the next day, and we went around the town, and it's probably got city status, but it feels like a town. It's that quaint, and it's very beautiful. And so Cambridge was
sounds like talking about Wrexham
nice.
Again here.
Well, do you know what? I'd rather be going to Wrexham this weekend because
that
is at least North Wales rather than South Wales. But that's a pretty big one on the Monday night slot. I'm looking forward to watching that Blackburn against Wrexham.
Yeah, I did keep feel like saying. Round 5, Wrexham versus United, you heard it here first. Does rely both of those teams to win, of course, which, who knows, no, both of their recent records. But, like I said, we'll be back on Monday, looking back at what did happen at Newport. Samuel will give us his full travel review of Rodney Parade, and we will be back for a Deadline Day special next Wednesday as well. I believe that might be myself and Ty. It might not be. Who knows? That's the fun of the Manchester Red podcast. Who knows what's going to come up? Thank you very much for joining us once again, and we will see you again next time.